Hey everybody, this is FinOps Fridays, our podcast hosted by Aptio and IBM, where we just try to talk FinOps. We try to get industry experts to share their wisdom, advice, experience, and also have a good time. Video stream live on LinkedIn, post to YouTube, and the audio is a little bit longer, and you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information, head over to aptio.com. But for now, let's dive right into the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining us today. My name is Hunter Willis, and today with FinOps Fridays, we've got Swapna Samuel on the line, and she is the, what's your formal title? It's head of cloud FinOps operations for BMO, right? And it says complete cloud in your LinkedIn total. Is that right?
That is correct, Hunter.
All right, great. So tell us a little about your role and what that means, and then we will dive into the conversation, Swapna. Again, thanks for joining us today, too.
Now, welcome. Glad to be here, Hunter. So as the title indicates, I have the privilege of leading the FinOps practice here at BMO. So we have this amazing FinOps team here, which is a mix of both finance and tech, so that we are able to bridge gaps between both the worlds and really bring out the meat and the value of FinOps across BMO.
That's great. Okay. And that's across the whole agency, right? The whole organization.
Yeah, correct. So predominantly right now, our main focus is TNO, so technology and operations. But again, we work with the cloud engineering to see everything at an end-to-end, but baby steps as we go.
Okay. All right, cool. And then outside of your professional role, we're going to do this round of rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
I am ready. Let's do this.
Help us all get to know you just a little bit better. Okay, cool. So the first one is a Mac or PC?
Mac.
And then kind of on the same tone a little bit, Android or Apple?
Apple.
May have guessed it. Chat or email?
Chat.
Meetings online or in person?
Ooh, that actually depends with who.
True story. Okay.
So of course, if you said meeting with Angelina Jolie, I would say yes, in person, definitely. So who will ride the one?
Yeah. All right. So Slack or Teams?
Teams.
Teams. Okay. Morning person or night owl?
Definitely morning.
Okay. All right. Coffee or tea in the same vein?
Surprisingly, neither.
Okay. Neither. Okay. So no caffeine at all, really?
Nope.
No, nothing. All right. Great. Spring or fall?
Fall.
Fall. Oh, yeah. Me too. I'm a fall guy. Cake or pie?
Again, neither, but I do love sorbet, so that's my sweet addiction.
Okay, sorbet is good. So probably pancakes or waffles, maybe neither there too, huh?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, all right. Dogs or cats?
Either is fine as long as it's my friends, because I've never actually had a pet my entire life, so...
Okay, so someone else's pet. That's fine. That's a really that's the best answer to that question, though. That's really good. Unless people love animals, but it's just funny. On the beach, to the mountains, or are you going to go take a tour if you're on vacation?
I would do the mountains.
The mountains. All right. And then do you consider yourself to be like an introvert or an extrovert?
I like to say an introverted extrovert. So I love my social times, but I do recharge by having my quiet time.
All right, great. Well, good to get to know you too. That's fantastic. Okay, so when I reached out to you and I said, hey, would you be willing to do a conversation with FinOps Fridays, your response to me was, yeah, and I'd like to talk about context. And I said, can you give me some context around that? But that sounds great in general. And we wanted to talk about the things that we've been talking about are like chargeback and communication and some of the kind of assumed principles of these things. But when the rubber meets the road, right, a lot of the things that you can apply conceptually to other operational aspects and like technical aspects, they don't apply when you're talking with people and trying to communicate and reach goals with other people when it comes to FinOps, because people aren't machines, right? So what are some of the things that you have really experienced in your role, like spinning up? I know that BMO has been kind of rolling into FinOps over the past couple of years here, and you've been a huge part, if not the primary part of that initiative. So talk to us about some of the things you've learned and the challenges you've overcome when it comes to, you know, how important context and communication is to that rollout into FinOps.
For sure. And so where we are have been with BMO as well is we honestly started like FinOps as a dedicated practice with a little pilot. And then we saw its value and decided that, yes, indeed, it is definitely worth setting up a dedicated team, having FinOps as a focus. And one of the things we really quickly learned is the need to have an apples to apples communication. So almost like having a lexicon established for FinOps within the org, because whether we like it or not, every organization has their own set of jargons and, you know, no shortage of abbreviations that keep going. And also making sure that between the various personas that we're able to translate that information accordingly, right? So whether we're talking with the engineers or talking with our finance folks, how do we actually transform data to information across personas, making sure it doesn't lose its meaning in the process? I think that was almost rudimentary for us to establish. And once we got that running, everything else seemed just to fit into place and flow and really click very well. But that definitely was the first starting point of establishing that foundation.
Can you talk about how you established that foundation? Was it like, hey, we're going to get buy-in on the terms and definitions and we're going to have a glossary for that for the organization? Or was it more organic than that?
A little more organic. So what we did is we found out a few stakeholders from different groups who we know were eager beavers, eager participants willing to give us their time. And rather than wait for like total consensus and take 3 months or 6 months to do this, we started spinning up meetings within a couple of days and saying, hey, here's what it is. Do you understand what we are saying? You know, and take, and we always took like beginner users or people who are brand new to this, right? Because if they couldn't understand what we're saying, we're not doing a good job, right? And so that was very key. So we spun up meeting, you know, with the engineers. So whether it was platforms or services or finance experts or our execs, we managed to establish like great key stakeholders who are willing to do it. And so rapid iterations. And that's what I'd always say. We're never going to get it perfect right, but with rapid iterations, continuously evolving it, we were able to get to where we wanted to. And so if you look and see like some of our content that we have is we'll say, hey, you know, like this is what a purchase plan means like. It kind of is like getting a gym membership for a year when honestly you don't really need it and you go to the gym only once a week, you know, trying to call out good examples which people can take day to day, but yet also not, liquidating the value and the term of it, right? So we gave it with its true worth and meaning, but yet made it relatable so that whichever angle you're coming from, it makes sense to you. And then you can deep dive into the level of depth that's comfortable for you. So that really helped.
That's fantastic. Is there a central place where people can go to look up those terms and definitions and explanations? Or is it, you just kind of like, okay.
Yeah. So we did establish our FinOps page so that it's easy to do it. We've kept it to a very minimalistic click view. So versus like, you know, a lot of crazy information packed into one page, we're like, no, it's got to be simple. You know, click, see these three, click, sub videos. You know, we don't want to cram an entire encyclopedia. I think I aged myself by using that or Wikipedia into one screen, but really keep it light and easy and simple. And obviously then say, you know, reach out to us. Let us know which perspective you're getting into so we can help guide it for you, right? So a nice balance between the two.
Now, is there any connection between that and like your more distributive taxonomy that you're using to like communicate with like stakeholders and then the different segments of the organization that, you know, your chargeback goes out to and things like that? Or is this solely, we're just talking about collaboration principles for communication right now, and that's like totally separate? Do they link together at all? And then do you coordinate that in any way?
Yes. So they are linked because the reason for that is we need to make sure we maintain consistency in how we communicate across anything, whether it's us presenting to a specific persona group or any of the materials that we do send out. So there has to be consistency in it. It's kind of like, I don't know if you're familiar with this. So there's a famous management guru who said, efficiency is doing things right and effectiveness is doing the right thing. And sometimes it's easy to do something really, really well, but not necessarily the right thing, or to do the right thing, but not be able to do it really well. And so one of the things we learned early on is to have that good balance to do it efficiently. So do the right things, but also do it well. And so keeping that as our goal and having that target constantly in front of us has been a good reminder, whether it's something as simple as getting our internal comms out or delving into reporting and visualizations or designing our chargeback process. Having that as our target has really helped us.
That is fantastic. So can we walk into the weeds a little bit and talk about, like, then, so we've talked about the communication, establishing a baseline, and then aligning that with what's going on in the technical side of things. Can you walk us into the weeds a little bit with that, like, the tagging process and what that looks like, and then tie that to maybe your chargeback and allocation if it's directly linked, and what that, do you know what I'm saying? Like walk us through what that looks like and how you set that up.
Sure. So the tagging process, more or less, we have it pretty much nailed down. So that in itself wasn't a key challenge for us. Not that it's perfect. You know, sure. There's always like context stuff that we work and how we deal with that and all of that good stuff as every.
Just for our listeners, can you describe what that is too? Just can you summarize what that is really quick, just for the people sure. on the line, right?
Sure. So we kept it really simple. We have one really key mandatory tag, right? So for simplification's sake, and that is our primary for identifying which resource it belongs to, who it belongs to, and so forth. And then we have our internal models of how we handle our untagged costs, but as well as how we handle shared costs, as well as applications where resources are split within it. Because as everyone knows, depending upon how in-depth you are into some of your applications, there are just some AWS resources that just can't be split against multiple resources, right? But not giving too much away, I would say if you'd like to know a little more detail on those, do join us at FinOpsX, where I and Natasha, she who's our senior FinOps financial manager, will actually be speaking in great detail on chargeback allocation models and how we really deal with, you know, the ones that are direct are always easy, but how do we deal with the ones that we know, here's an application, but it's being shared, and here's one that I know I can't divide it. What do I do? And how do I optimize in those cases, right? Who owns that accountability? So definitely we're going to be talking a lot about that. We will be showcasing our internal framework as well for guiding principles. So if you are or haven't decided yet, please do come to the FinOpsX in San Diego. Would love to meet up with you guys.
Yeah, that's awesome. So definitely check that out. Check out the session online too. They post a lot of them afterwards if you register and everything like that, if you can't make it out too. And also I would say there is, I mean, before we move further into the tagging and everything, since we've already called out the FinOps Foundation, FinOpsX, there's also information at finops.org for that information as well. So check that out too. So we talked about, so you've described your tagging process to a certain extent. A specific question, if you will indulge me, that I want to ask is, like, you said there's one primary tag that you've asked engineers to, and clearly the values are structured in such a way that you can extract an enormous amount of information out of that one tag. Is there, what would you say is like the minimum requirement for the number of tags that you have on there? So there's a one major tag, and then would you say, like, how many supporting tags before you say, okay, you're good to go for those engineers?
So we have four supporting tags that are there. But for now, what we've done is that one primary tag in turn feeds to a lot of metadata that actually has information that we need to help us delve into further details of splitting and dicing and so forth. But that one primary tag is our key. Now, again, needless to say that that'll continue to change as we go into it. So again, we want to make sure that we don't overcomplicate our processes. But going forward for the rest of the year, we are looking to expand it to 2 mandatory tags at the most, but really getting efficient and effective in it to try and get the right data.
That's fantastic. I want to call out that there are principles of collaboration out there. There's different collaboration frameworks that talk about communication, and a lot of it has to do with taxonomy and labeling information so that you can collaborate around it effectively, mm-hmm. right? And definitely one of the biggest rules is as few labels, as little metadata as you can, but being able to extract as much information out of that mandate. So two is a fantastic number. They say the general rule of thumb from my years of experience doing migrations and data management, records management, and all these different things, they're all like, if you go more than 3, you've just lost everyone. So knowing that you guys designed it around just 2 is just, that's just awesome. So I don't know why I'm so excited about that, but it really is great. So anyway, that's fantastic. All right. So let's crawl back out of the weeds from that and talk to me about some of the communication around, you know, deploying that, as well as like your chargeback and how you got everybody mm-hmm. on the same page with your FinOps practice as it was coming up. And I'd love to hear more about that and how that went down.
For sure. And one of the terms that I love to use is contextualized reporting. So if you say, hey, what do you mean by that? So let me give you an example, right? A lot of people will come and say, the distance between 2 points, the shortest distance between 2 points is a straight line. And if someone accepts it for what it is, that's actually not a good idea, because the main question is, well, what's the object you're trying to measure? Because that statement is only true if it's a plane. If it's a spear, it's not. For any of you golf fans out there who love playing golf, if I were to tell you my golf club distance is 113 yards, you probably might write me off as like, okay, beginner, that sounds okay. But if I gave you the context of saying that it's 113 yards using a lob wedge, you'll realize that, oh, that's PGA's tour standards. That's even greater than advance. But again, that's not my stats. Just an example. But context is very important in our reporting. And so how we managed to bridge the gap early is knowing that there's no point me telling someone saying, hey, you know, here's your 0.25 utilization stats on this and so forth, and then take it up to, you know, your finance folks or your business managers and say, do something about it. It is truly understanding that there's data and then there's information and there's context around that information. And so if I were to go to an exec and say that these were your costs last month and these are your costs this month, out of context, it should mean nothing, because it could cause panic saying why, or it could cause like misplaced happiness saying, oh, I'm growing my footprint. But if I were to tell you saying, hey, you had 5 applications this month, you had 10 last month, but your costs have doubled, cause for concern, not really celebration, and vice versa as well, right? So giving reporting in context is so important, irrespective of the persona. And I think that's something that we often miss, because we talk about saying, you know, I need to report on this, I need to show this. But showing these metrics without context loses the value of what we're trying to show. And so that is something we've really been focused on. And I think that's where key success is going to lie in just FinOps as a whole. Truly telling what is the story with the context in which it was found.
Yeah, and I think immediately, like, our brains, since a lot of people that are active online and kind of listening to these sorts of podcasts and information, etc., we're thinking from this, like, hey, we're kind of the more technical people, and we're talking about mm-hmm. context, pushing it out to others, but that content. Same thing is true for people on the engineering side, especially when you're talking about like right sizing and commitments and things like that. Is that, can you talk about that a little bit, that side of the house?
Oh, absolutely. Right. Because sometimes what happens is, and no fault to anybody, right? But if we see like a pricing from a CSP saying, hey, if you break down your storage by XYZ, then your price point drops. Fair statement. And so someone could basically then take the storage and break it up, thinking I've reduced my cost, say, 5 times by breaking it up. But what they don't understand is because that statement was taken out of context, you are charged for your throughput 5 times the number now. So while you think you brought down your storage costs, you might have actually multiplied your throughput costs because you didn't take that into consideration. Ergo, context, even in our architecture and in our guidance and how we want to look things and engage with our CSPs as well for advice, and we have to be very cognizant in terms of what is the context of the recommendation, and ergo, what is the context of how we're choosing our measures to see is what I'm doing right versus I've done something out of context. It looks efficient in of itself, but it isn't effective.
That's right. Look, yeah, it's almost like it feels like it's this quick win, but if you don't, you know, in the long run, it'll come back to get you, right?
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit on the specifics of how you're communicating this out to the wider org, though, when it does come to those, that communication to like finance and the different the teams? Is that embedded in the reporting, or is it like there's a glossary, or you structure communication with the reports embedded into that? Is it?
Yeah. So what we do is, so one good thing, I think I mentioned this in the beginning, is the way our team is structured and how we build our team is we have a good mix of tech and finance within our team. So we have the accountants, those are familiar with audits, controls, governance, the whole shebang. Plus we have solution architects within our team with a solid background in cloud architecture as well, right? So it's a nice mix of both. And so what happens is when we draw up contextualized reporting, we do two things. One is sending those materials in advance, helping people subscribe to persona-based views, but also ensuring that we do meet with them to run them through. Because what happens is, despite knowing what the context is, it's important to have that first guidance with them and say, here's where it is, you know, this is what it means, and then do it. And because our team is, again, well-formed, it's easy for us to divide and conquer between the finance-centric, the cloud-centric, the hybrid ones, the exec ones, but being very cognizant of who our audience is and ensuring that our reporting is easily translatable. So, and I think that's one thing that I've been very keen on with our team in designing all of these, is to make sure that it's write once, use many, right? I don't want it to be someone's dedicated job to have to now make 15 different versions of this one thing because of who it's going to. No. I've designed it in a way that I can see it. And if you're looking for detailed finance, here's where you go. If you're looking for detailed tech, here's where you go, and make sure it's accessible without sending someone into, you know, this huge Mario Hunt game where they have to hit every brick to find out where's the mushroom, right?
Yeah, or
where's
awesome.
The reward. So that's just terrible, you know, because I feel like often we design these things and we send our users saying, you know, keep clicking, like, you know, keep searching until you find it. Didn't you know? And so really avoiding that for them to make sure it's, you know, up and easy, I think is key. Again, we are no way, I'm going to say like, yeah, we've gotten there, all that. It is a very ongoing process of improvement. One thing I have to say, our stakeholders are absolutely fabulous in giving us our feedback. The teams are very collaborative as we work through. And I think it's also because having both tech and finance allows us to talk at all levels of depth with the respective stakeholders, so that it's not having a discussion and someone trying to figure out what the other party is saying. We truly understand each other and therefore are able to make it a lot quicker and effectively, right? So we're just on a journey. So hoping for so much more to come in the year. It's going to be fun.
And like the when you talked about it earlier, having people that don't really know what's going on read what you're writing to confirm that the communication is, I love that. And I love what you just said too. When I'm trying to distribute information and get people to understand it, one of the first things I think of is like, hey, how much are they going to have to think? Like, and how many clicks is it going to take for them to reach the thing and get to where they need to go? Because like the less they have to actually process in their brain what they're looking at, the faster they'll understand it, the more they appreciate your proactiveness in delivering that information to them, and the less work they have to do. So they, like, do you find that they really appreciate the effort that you put into that? And like, have you gotten positive feedback and created cohesion around this too?
Yeah, so like I said, we are in the initial stages of that, but the ones we've gotten feedback from have all been great, right? Because what we kind of did is, and we touched upon this in the beginning, right? Like Apple, yay.
Right.
But again, that is by no ways a BMO endorsement, guys. Just calling that out. It's a very personalized opinion. Just making sure that's out there. But it's kind of like this, right? For those who like in-depth features, they're going to know the finger swipes on the trackpad, the three left, the three down. You know, they're going to know it as the user because the functionality is available. For those who don't need that in-depth, all they need to know is my right and left click, right? And that's how we're creating our report. That's how we're creating our comms to say that it's there, but it's not being forced upon if you don't need it. Whatever you need is going to be there readily for you. And as you need to deep dive, it's so self-explanatory. And even if it's not, you're just one click away from seeing what else is there, right? I think a great example is for our non-tech users, we get to saying, here's your non-prod weekend costs. Here are your costs for running resources 24/7. And here are the applications that are associated to it. And here's who owns it under your portfolio. Simple, straightforward. Obviously, those details can be clicked down to go through more information and so forth. That same exact variation is there for the respective tech side of the people, because what it does is it allows you to see details by your resource ID, what is it associated to, which environments, you know, and all of those other details, the utilization stats on it. Because if you see the CPU utilization is less than 2, should you really be having it or not? But again, that nice bifurcation of it is the same information, but how it's presented and what level, I think is key, right? So not watering down the data, but ensuring the information is actually bringing value to whom it's being presented.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is fantastic. All right, I'm going to sidestep our conversation just a little bit, move over. Sure. Because one of the most common questions, not only for FinOps, but also in this entire industry for anything that we always get, is resistance to buy-in and how you overcame it, right? So clearly, you didn't just flip a switch and start communicating and everybody was like, yeah, we have to have this. Fantastic. Thanks for solving all these problems for us, right? There was obviously some obstacles towards getting people bought in on these processes and understanding that they now owned, you know, spend in the cloud from their perspective. Can you talk a little about overcoming those kinds of obstacles within the organization?
Fair. I think at the end, it does boil down to marketing strategy, right? You have to make people want it. Now, again, it's not that people don't want to bring value. It's the fact that everyone is doing a lot of high priority items as part of their jobs. And so they have their focus and the heads are, you know, deep down into whatever roles they already have. And so throwing another 100-page document saying you also need to do this is not going to make it any easier for them or for us, right?
Yeah. Hey, another task that you have to take on.
Exactly. And right. You have to do these 15 other things, right? That's not what it is. If you've seen like some of the marketing strategies that they have, they'll say, oh, you know, here's a pair of sneakers that you don't even have to tie your shoelace. You can just kick your foot in, right? Like that's about it. Or the Roomba, if you guys like it, you don't even have to go and vacuum. You know, just schedule it and it's done for you. Come downstairs and it's all clean, right? And I think being cognizant of it to see, how can we minimize additional effort and maximize value? And so what we did is, as we started off our practice, we basically ensured that we looked at first at the heavy bleeders within the organization, right? And look to try and stop the bleeding there and bring that value up front. So
define that, define heavy bleeders.
So heavy bleeders are basically ones that are low risk activities, but are having insane costs flowing, right? It could be just because no one has taken a look at it. And one thing I do want to reiterate is there's a lot of great material out there online. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. When you look at optimization, the 10 or 15 problems is typically what every organization has for right. 10 or 15 problems in terms of optimization, right? So I
just
think,
to clarify and like dumb it down, we're just talking about like unutilized storage that's just been sitting there and not touched, instances that are on but nobody's accessed in 8 months and that kind of stuff, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Gotcha, quick gotcha. Wins, right? And I think that's important. I think when we look at FinOps, it's important to know that I don't have to try and do something now that someone has never done before. Like, don't reinvent the wheel. Like, a lot of great stuff is out there that already teaches us what things are, right? So learn from that and then be part of the change. And that's what we were very cognizant of. So great articles that we got to read, our exposure to all the stuff that we learned from, like, you know, the previous FinOps summits and Aptio's and AWS conferences and all have taught us quite a lot. And then podcasts such as yours and other ones that we've got, Rahul Subramanian's CloudFix ones were excellent. So quite a few things like that. So we knew exactly where we wanted to go. And so that allowed us to showcase value really fast, extremely rapidly. And so when you showcase those numbers up front and say, hey, we put in this much effort and look at what has transpired, right? It's almost like putting a little bit of yeast into dough and then you see it, but this is everything in reverse. Mm-hmm. You put in a little effort in optimizing, oh, you just see all these costs disappear.
Exactly. With the airline companies, they just show the beach, right? They pretty don't much. Show the plane, they show the beach. That's where you're going. That's great. I love it.
Yeah. And so saying that, you know, you don't have to figure this out on your own. We are here to help facilitate with it and we'll help bring the groups together, right? It's not going to be, you know, a really bad game of ping pong where, you know, you have to hit it here and then it goes somewhere else. And we say, oh, we're not going to go pick up the ball. You go get it. And then someone says, oh, I'm not coming back to play. Then you need to find someone else to go. So we're not playing that, but we're saying we are here with you in the journey to make sure you see it end to end. We'll help bring the different pieces off the right people there to help you get to where you need to be. And I think that has been important. One, showcasing the value of what it is to get people excited about it, and then helping be part of the journey that bridges gaps in the process. Because let's be real, right? No one has every process nailed down. There are always processes that have to be improved. But one thing for sure is everyone wants to do the right thing. Everyone wants to make sure that they're architecting well, that they are not wasting money. Everyone wants to do that. And so recognizing that and respecting that, I think, is very key, because then what happens is we really help to facilitate that collaboration, which is important, right? Versus saying, oh, you don't know what you're doing. And that's not necessarily true.
Can you, this is, I'm very much enjoying this conversation, I have to tell you. Can you talk a little bit about just the organization from your FinOps, like your FinOps team and the structure of it, right? Like, not necessarily asking you, like, how many dedicated FinOps practitioners do you have or anything like that, but like, do you just have like a long email list or maybe like a monthly meeting, or do you just create like newsletters that go out to keep people on the same page? What's the organization and communication look like around the continuing practice?
So the short version of that will be all of the above, which seems a lot, but it is basically different audiences, honestly, for it, right? So we have ones where we do meet with our engineering folks and their respective governance team so that we are aligned tightly with that. We do have monthly cadences with our business managers and our finance leads. We do have a cadence where we do meet with the execs as well with it. Plus, we do have activities where we are constantly in touch with our operations teams, our platforms teams, our cloud services teams as well, and ensuring that together we're coming up with, you know, it's almost like our let's collaborate and come up with great ideas kind of a piece. So, and I think that's one thing that's been really great is it's everyone working together for FinOps initiatives, which I think is really cool because I'll get a note from someone in engineering saying, hey, let's do this because it's a FinOps initiative. So FinOps truly now has become a word that's not reflective of a team, but it's reflective of a value. Oh, and I think that's huge, right? Because
it gives me goosebumps. It's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah, because what happens is when it becomes like a team activity, then it's more like, oh, it's this team versus that team and who's showing value. And what we've been able to do really early on, truly, and I'm so excited about it, by God's grace, that happened, is we've been able to establish FinOps as value. It's not a team, it's value, that, and it's a practice, it's a framework that everyone needs to adhere to. And so that's what's been fantastic. So whether it's discussing with an app owner or different groups from engineering, it comes up of saying, here's a FinOps initiative, which is the right culture to have.
Yeah, and then to reiterate something you mentioned earlier too, mm-hmm. is that for the concrete definitions and practices and processes, you've got like a centralized deposit place for that, like a intranet site, if you will, where people can go and look up all of that stuff too. So it's not just the push, there's also a pull aspect to it as well.
Correct. And one of the things we want to make sure is there's a lot of self-serve material, right? Not like, you know, here's a 150, 75 page document with 300 screenshots, which you now have to read, right? And I'm saying those are bad. They have its place, but trying to ensure that there are self-serve, you know, quick videos that are there that people can read, easily look through, look at the transcripts and just be like, oh, okay, I know what I need to do in order to get this. If I want this, where do I need to go? Right? Show the value and then give the direction versus here are 15 directions, follow them and then see if the value fits you. Right? And I think that's different. I'd rather say, oh, you know what? Here's DQ. Here's McDonald's. Here's this. What are you looking for? I'll tell you how to get there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and the two things that I have taken away from my past life that work in this life as well is that, like, professionally speaking, is that people can read for the taxonomy stuff we talked about, tagging. You can reach out to records managers in your organization if you have any. They love talking about this stuff, and they're always surprised when people ask them for help because they feel kind of isolated in their roles a lot of times. So, like, reach out to records managers about taxonomy. But the other thing I want to talk about is I had completely forgotten about this until you talked about this aspect of what you're doing with communication, but sometimes marketing teams will help with IT communication if you can make a friend there and ask them. And some of the bigger companies, especially that are focused on tech, will have dedicated internal communications marketing people for their IT teams to do that. So don't be afraid to approach. That's amazing and an excellent precedent and example, Swapna, to approach your communication like you would a full-on marketing campaign with videos, emails, you know, different kinds of content for different audiences and personas, because that is, it's not one size fits all. People want to consume things different ways and you need to send different messages to different people. But again, what Swapna said, right? Communicate in such a way that the most people can understand it, no matter who you're communicating to. So you can reuse that content and reduce effort on your end and reduce the effort to consume it. Swapna, give us some more takeaways before we sign off here in a minute or two. What's your, like, your best pieces of advice from this conversation and from your experience for people approaching FinOps and maybe also even people that are kind of, you know, in that mature, maybe they're going from the mature walk, running into that run phase of FinOps. What are the takeaways for you for all of this and the things you've learned in this process?
I would say, you know, honestly, the first key thing is, as cheesy as it sounds, is I would say keep it fun, because everyone has stressful jobs and everyone wants to do the right thing. I think that's the first thing we need to recognize. There's no one sitting in the company that says, oh, let me see how I can waste $1 million this week, right? Everyone wants to do the right thing. And so have fun with it. I think as you spoke about like marketing strategy, for example, like we had our team's backgrounds with different, you know, different wallpapers and backgrounds, some as important as, you know, tagging some key principles, but some would be cheesy, like, you know, why did the chicken cross the cloud road? To bridge the gap between strategy and execution.
Right.
You know? So you can get as awesome. Cheesy as you want,
right.
Or, you know, have actually good values, right? Like you'll see a picture of, you know, like a cloud engineer sitting with an umbrella saying, you know, why is it raining cloud costs? Well, because, you know, they forgot to look at the optimization for the day. Like have fun with it, but also I think as much as we tell other groups to say proactively monitor your optimization, I think it is a big FinOps responsibility to ensure that we proactively engage, right? Sometimes it's very easy to go into this, yes, there's shift left of accountability. We're not diluting that aspect, but there is also an aspect of knowing that this is new. I don't need to turn my product owners into cloud techies. And we need to be very cognizant of that. What is our objective of this, right? And then always please look at measures in context, because measures out of context will send us down potentially the wrong direction. So wins that may appear to be wins may not really be that, and vice versa. I think those would be my key takeaways.
Man, you know, I never thought about this before, but everything you just said made me think of like that FinOps in a way is an internal business, and your capital as FinOps is the total sum of cloud spend, and your profitability is the savings that you're getting out of cloud or cost reduction, right? And so, you know, you're working to like communicate how we're all going to make this happen, and then you've got your teams that are working to make it happen, and then the teams that are consuming it, right? It's amazing. But this has been fantastic. I've loved hearing about the culture and everything that you've been talking about that's establishing your organization and BMO there. But Swapna, there's one piece of advice you forgot. You got to go see Swapna at FinOpsX 2024 San Diego. And if you're listening to this after FinOpsX 2024, go out, check and see if you can find that session or other speaking sessions that she has done online. Everybody, thanks for listening again today. Again, my name is Hunter Willis with Swapna Samuel here on FinOps Fridays. Stay tuned for a little bit more that we've got going on the podcast here in just a moment. But thanks again for listening today. And Swapna, thank you so much for your time and coming on here today. And thank you so much for this amazing conversation. I really appreciate you. You can take a second and say what you want to sign off.
No. Thank you, Hunter. And thank you everyone for listening. And one quick tip, when you're looking at your return on investments, please make sure you always check what your driver is. Because if your driver is innovation, then what you're measuring against is different. If your driver is cost saving, what you're measuring against is different. If your driver is security and resilience, then the measures what you're looking at is different. So context and everything will take us all a really long way.
Awesome.
Thank you, Hunter. Appreciate
Absolutely
it.
True. Sure thing. All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
All right. Thank you again, Swapna. We're going to go ahead and move on to the mailbag portion of our podcast. And today, the question is, how can we get more accurate in forecasting our cloud costs, and how do we incorporate custom pricing and commitments into those forecasts? Well, the first thing I'm going to do is reference the FinOps Foundation and let you know that they do have a whole section on forecasting cloud costs. They really break this down into the same kind of like maturity model and walk, crawl, walk, and run phases, right, for forecasting. And I want to start by saying that, you know, why do we forecast, right? Like when we want to consider why we're doing this, and the primary reason for most cloud organizations is to be able to inform a budget, right? And so a forecast, the way that we look at this, it's more of a plan, okay, based on past consumption as well as a combination of like seasonality, right, growth trends, and also inorganic growth,
Right. So like maybe your organization has an advertising campaign that's going to come up that you know may cause increased consumption for cloud resources. And then there's also net new spend, right? So you may be having like a new product release or a bunch of new features releasing on a certain cadence. And you have to be able to incorporate estimations for those costs into plans to build a forecast. And so, you know, that is a top challenge, according to the FinOps Foundation, right? The data.finops.org, we look back to 2022, it was a number two challenge at that time, and it remains in the top 3 to 5 challenges for years past and years, this past year as well. So it's to say that the most important part of forecasting is, number one, being able to get the information that you need to build that plan slash inform forecast that then informs a budget. So being able to have lines of communication and a process, right, that you can build according to how your organization works, but work with your FinOps practitioners to do this. You'll need to, you know, especially depending on how your chargeback models work and communication out with different lines of the business or the organization function, you'll need to be able to understand what their future plans are going to be, right? And it's never the case that they can't just say, hey, we need new cloud resource, give it to us immediately, and then boom, your costs go up. There's got to be some leeway in front of that to allow you to adjust your forecast on a monthly, quarterly, and annual basis. And so being able to get as much information as you can, as soon as you can, to understand what their needs are going to be, and then get cost estimation from your engineers to incorporate that into plans that can then inform a forecast that includes net new spend, the potential inorganic growth, again, based on anticipated increased demand, and then incorporates some level of seasonality, incorporates organic growth, right, for the cloud program. Now, when we look at how that can be done, again, most organizations are doing this in spreadsheets, kind of doing that as best they can and building out models on monthly to quarterly basis inside those spreadsheets, and then reporting those to their financial teams to get, to apply for budget, basically, for based on those numbers and to adjust forecasts for future budget. But when we look at the way that engineering works, right, there's a lot of things happening in a faster cadence. And so there's a lot of software, both like FinOps tools as well as engineering software, that can provide you like a machine learning forecast that kind of shoots up a straight line in the future based on past consumption. Some even incorporate seasonality. Right. And so what we see is organizations that do have that level of software, as much as they can, getting data from those forecasting numbers and kind of compiling it into spreadsheets for resources, groups of resources, or based on chargeback to inform future budgets, right, but based on that forecast. But ideally, having lines of community, and this takes a long time, right? If you look at the FinOps Foundation, they're saying, you know, takes 1 to 3 years or so. So for each phase of maturity and forecasting, they're saying it takes a whole year to move up to the next phase for most organizations that they talk to. The goal is having a 5% variance from your forecast, so that keeping your actual cloud spend within 5% of what your forecasted numbers would be, okay? Which means that communication and having a system for inputting communicated anticipated cost with accurate estimates for those costs at the individual workload slash application slash resource level, depending on the needs of, you know, the individual lines of business for the organization. That's what's going to build your forecast. Compiling those individual pieces of information based on, you know, the dates and trends, dates of anticipated new spend slash increased spend, and then the trends of organic growth that you've seen in the past, and incorporating seasonality into that. Is there's not really an easier way to do this. Now, again, automating that as much as you can. I mentioned that, you know, a lot of organizations we see are pulling that organic forecasting data out of software and kind of putting it into spreadsheets. There are some forecasting tools, like financial forecasting tools, that do have inputs for cloud. And there are a select few FinOps tools that have forecasting feature sets that are kind of driven towards this a little bit to help you build a driver-based forecast. But there are organizations that have successfully built a practice via spreadsheets and internal communication to make this happen. So it's not impossible. It takes time, right? And it takes communication frameworks, inputs, and discipline from the people involved. But that's what all of FinOps is all about, right? It's about keeping up with numbers, developing that operate phase, right? Where everybody knows what to do, sources of truth are visible, everybody knows where to find information on how they should proceed with different processes. Engineers know they should be optimizing resources, and you know, your FinOps team along with your finance and cloud teams are doing everything they can to increase their commitment coverages. Along with that is this, hey, people need to be communicating as part of their chargeback loops as well as just general operations, estimating costs for net new workloads and planned increases in cloud spend, and that information needs to go into a consolidated place that builds numbers that are estimated costs for the future. So that's it. There's not really a faster way to make that happen. It's all about communication and discipline, and developing standard practices around that forecast. And this is typically a finance side role. So if you're having trouble understanding what that forecast should look like or how to format it, you can talk with your finance teams, but ultimately it needs to lay within the cloud program and the FinOps practitioners to build those numbers, because the engineers are the only ones that are really going to understand the requirements of workloads and be able to estimate the costs for workloads supporting applications, right? And then your FinOps practitioners have that role of translating, hey, we have this giant spreadsheet full of tons of details and information for cloud resources, and we need to be able to tell finance how this informs the budget, right? Get it into a format that's acceptable for them. Again, that's typically like a monthly or quarterly number. And then, you know, inform a budget that can then be proposed to support the program that is as accurate as it can possibly be. So that is the information there. Again, you can read most of what I just said is explained out in detail with a little bit more structure on the FinOps.org website under their forecasting best practices. And that page specifically is just called Exploring Cloud Forecasting, Cloud Cost Forecasting, excuse me. Oh, there is one more thing I wanted to add to this is that, you know, that question around the commitment spend, it's important to understand that you can apply certain discounts and attempt to apply discounts to your forecast and include commitments, but it's hard to know exactly how much you're going to save based on theoretical information that are inputs and theoretical growth, right? And we see is that it benefits the cloud organization more to forecast costs based on a baseline of the either the, you know, the custom pricing that you have with the CSP or the base or list retail price, so that you can then clearly more articulate the amount of cost reduction or savings that that commitment spend is providing for the organization as a KPI or a metric that you can brag about, right? That is really important to understand. And the same thing is true with like optimized resources. You know, engineers are going to estimate the size and the, you know, the different resource services that they need to run a workload. And those are, you know, some of them are going to be optimized ideally later on. And so you're not going to be able to outright incorporate that in a forecast, but you do want to show yourself, you know, give yourself some wiggle room for savings. Because if you try to tweak out a forecast that already includes commitment spend and all, you know, assumes that all the resources are right-sized or optimized exactly to their utilization, then if you have overages, right, that's, it's just going to be worse and they're going to be more likely to happen. So better to go ahead and proceed with a list cost and, you know, optimize resources as much as possible from an estimation, from an outlook, right? But understand that there's going to have to be adjustments made. And that's the whole point of this, right? This is the point of FinOps, saying, look, do the best you can to forecast those numbers with an understanding that you're going to do everything you can to save costs in the cloud. But none of this is ever going to be perfect, right? That goal, end goal metric KPI is 5% accuracy, which is what Wall Street expects of any organization. And so if you can get within that 5% target, if your forecast numbers are wind up being within 5% of what your actuals are at the end of a quarter or the end of a year, that's really great. It's really impressive, and you've reached that run phase. The last thing to touch on is you have to be able to track those numbers to as close to every individual workload as you possibly can, so that you can understand what is causing the variance when you have it, right? So at every level that you possibly can, track spend to plan. This is, if you have a robust chargeback model. It makes things easier. You can just kind of do that at those chargeback lines. But, you know, getting down to individual workloads and resources, obviously, if you can do that through, you know, cloud software or a really detailed spreadsheet that you're monitoring with exports, etc., that is obviously, you know, the most efficient and best way to make that happen, so that you can report on those numbers. You can have an understanding of what is causing the excess in spending, what drove your variance, and then you can plan how to reduce that variance. All right. Thanks again for listening today. Again, my name is Hunter Willis. This has been FinOps Fridays, and we will see you next time. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to this episode of FinOps Fridays. If you have any FinOps questions or questions about the podcast, reach out to us at FinOpsFridays@apptio.com. You can also find more information at the website there as well. We're also really active on social media, so hope that you like, subscribe to our content, and if you have any questions, you can also comment there. Hope to see you next time. Hope you have a good one. Until then.